Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Leah Haley, here we are in Eureka Springs at the end of the Ozarks. And how are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you, Jerry?
Pretty good. We want to follow up a little bit on your stories because they're pretty amazing, and I want to get into the mind control that you talk about a lot in unlocking alien closets. But first of all, before we even get into the UFO things, I love your little book on pet peeves.
Thanks. Yeah, it's called In Heaven, and actually it was an accident how I wrote that book. One day I was walking in the Kmart parking lot, and I stepped on a piece of gum, and just off the top of my head, I said, in heaven, I can walk anywhere I want and never step on gum. And so it became kind of a joke with my husband and me. Every time something would happen that irritated me, I would just say, in heaven, this doesn't happen. And he said, you need to collect these and put them all together in a little gift book. So I did that. So after I got more than 100 of them, you know, written down over a course of a period of time, then I've published that book.
Well, you got this is a great little gift idea and all kinds of little pet peeves, and they can order that off your website as well, I think.
Right, they can get that from greenleafpublications.com or Amazon. Any of the online bookstores have it.
And let's talk a little bit about your abduction experiences. It started as a child.
Yeah, the first experience that I can remember happened when I was about 3 years old, and my family was fishing at a lake in Alabama, and my dad got sick, and we had to row the boat to the shore, and my dad laid out on the bank of the lake for a while, and my brother and I were just running around playing at the edge of the woods, and I saw this odd-looking, what I called an odd-looking child inside the woods. But this odd-looking child had off-white colored skin and big black eyes and no ears and no hair and didn't look like any other child I had ever seen in my life. And he asked my brother and me if we wanted to go take a ride in his space. Well, he called it would you like to go take a ride in this big round ball type thing. And so I said, I can't do that. My mother would get mad. And he said, we'll make things all right with your mother. And so he led us into the woods, and we were beamed aboard the craft, and my brother and I were allowed to explore the craft. And after a while, we got tired and had to take a nap, and the aliens put us on tables, and next thing I knew, the aliens were taking us back to the edge of the woods to rejoin my parents.
And did your parents think you were gone for any amount of time or what?
Yeah, I've talked to my mother about this quite some time, and you know, she wasn't aware that we were gone. So apparently the aliens did something to my parents to freeze that period of time so that they had no recollection of what was going on.
How about your brother? Did he recollect anything?
My brother did not remember anything because he was only a year old at the time. He was just barely walking when that happened.
Yeah, they would have had to freeze the time because your mother would have noticed a one-year-old was missing pretty surely.
Oh, absolutely. She was a very protective mother. In fact, no offense, Mom, but overprotective. So she would have been very, very concerned.
Well, you're not a stranger to people who watch talk shows. I remember back in the 90s, early 90s, you were on the Joan Rivers show.
Right, yeah, that was in 1993.
So. And you actually had a book out at that time, which is still available, and it's called Lost with the Key.
Right, Lost with the Key, and it talks about my abduction experiences through 1992, and these are experiences primarily with the creatures that have the big black eyes, but I've run into a couple of other creatures throughout the years, but those primarily, and also how at the very beginning when I started trying to find out what in the world was happening to me, questioning what was going on, whether I was going crazy or whether things were really happening, the military got interested in my case and started following me around. I started hearing odd noises on my telephone, and being harassed by the black unmarked helicopters and that sort of thing. So that's what that book talks about.
And, in fact, that's one of the things we're going to concentrate here on the interview with Leah Haley is we talked a long time in Laughlin, and then again we've had a phone interview as well. You really feel the government probably treated you a little worse than the ETs.
At the very beginning, they were pretty horrible. There was one situation where I had had an abduction experience and was dropped off in the field by the alien entities rather than being taken all the way home. And while I was standing out in the field, this helicopter landed in front of me, and military personnel carrying M16s jumped out of the helicopter, dragged me into the helicopter, took me to a military base, led me off the copter into a conference room where people were waiting for me to arrive, by the way. Of course, I'm kicking and screaming and uttering a little bit of words some words that weren't very nice. Really.
Yeah, you weren't ladylike like you normally are.
I was not ladylike at all, I'm afraid.
But you had an excuse.
Well, I wasn't concerned about excuses at that time. I really just let them have it, actually, and didn't do me any good, you know. I mean, they dragged me in there, and as soon as I was led into the conference room, somebody gave me a shot in my right arm, shoved me down into a chair. A woman wearing a blue Air Force uniform brought in a tape recorder and set it on the table. So I assume that it was interrogated, but I honestly don't believe. I mean, I don't remember what I was asked. What I do remember is a man dressed in a khaki uniform sitting across the table. Sometimes he was sitting, sometimes standing, and he was very, very stern, very mean, and he kept saying over and over to me, "You did not see a spaceship. Do you understand? You did not see a spaceship." And I said, "I don't care what you say. You know, I know what happened, and you're not going to shut me up." And so the only way you're going to shut me up is to kill me. And he said very nastily, "If it's necessary, that's exactly what we'll do." So for about a year, I was scared to death, and I believed the threats, and I kept my mouth shut, and I looked over my shoulder all the time. I didn't trust a soul. I really absolutely was scared to death for about an entire year in my life, which is pure hell because of the fear. And then I finally decided that being afraid was no way to live. What kind of life was that, you know, that I'd just rather them go on and kill me than to be afraid. And then I started thinking, well, what right do these people have to keep this stuff quiet? You know, it's happening. It's truth. People have a right to the truth. And I'm going to talk about it. And if they kill me, so be it. But as you can see, you know, this is, what, 11 years, no, excuse me, longer than that. This is 13 years later. I'm still here. I'm still well. I'm still alive. And the threats were just idle threats. They did not kill me. They just wanted me to keep my mouth shut.
Now, so your message to other people who have experiences like this is don't let them bluff you?
Well,
Or not.
I'm not going to go.
You don't want that on your conscience?
No, I don't want that responsibility. All I can say is what my own personal experience has been, and I have received threats many, many times throughout the years, and the black helicopters flying over, which at the beginning they were to harass me, I feel, and I'm fine. So, you know, I'm not taking responsibility for anybody else. They're going to have to do what their conscience tells them to do and take their own responsibility for it.
Now, you say you've had recent, you still see black helicopters, right?
Right. Now, the black helicopters still come over my house, but obviously since I've written books on this subject and I lecture everywhere about it and do radio shows and I'm not going to keep quiet, it is no longer an intimidation technique. Now, I know what's going on is some of the times these copters are monitoring me, doing surveillance. And at other times, some of them are doing mind control on me. And my husband caught them in the act of doing mind control on me in June of 2000.
So now, he came home unexpectedly or something?
Right. What happened there was I had some kind of weird experience happen during the night around 4:30 a.m., and I told my husband about it. He wasn't able to go back to sleep, but I did after that. He had to get up at 5:30 to go to work anyway. So he got on up and he got to work, left around 5:30 as usual. I was supposed to get up around that time and get ready to go to work, but I didn't feel very well that morning. And I laid in bed a little bit later than I should have. And while I was still lying there, I heard a helicopter approaching and come over our house. And it stopped and hovered over the roof of our house. And after it stopped, this voice came into my head that said, "You're too sick to go to work today. You have a headache. You're dizzy." And as I was told these things, I was feeling worse and worse and worse, and I became paralyzed and couldn't move.
And you were actually hearing these voices, or was it in your head?
It was in my head, but I still could identify it as a male voice.
Okay, we'll be right back and find out about this. This is Jerry Pippen. We're talking with Leah Haley. And, of course, this is the UFO file. Leah Haley has some incredible experiences. We're talking basically, I guess, these are government people, you think, always, or military, or what?
I'm really not sure. Just a minute ago, we were talking about the black helicopter that was over the roof of my house. Okay, what happened after, the voice was telling me that I was getting sick, and I was getting sick and paralyzed and couldn't move. Suddenly, the helicopter started flying away. And I thought, oh, that was nothing. That was just an airplane with engine trouble, But it was like a voice was telling me that, too. And at that moment, my husband came running into the house, yelling, "Leah, Leah, are you all right? Are you all right?" And I said, "No, I'm not. Why do you ask, and what are you doing home? You'd already left for work."
Sure.
And he said, "Well, I was driving to work, and I got sick. I got an upset stomach. I had to come back home." And he said, as I was approaching the house, I saw a black unmarked helicopter hovering above the house, and I wondered what they were doing to you. And he said, "I made a rude gesture at it with my hand, and it flew off." So he said, "Now you tell me what they were doing." So of course, my husband scared the helicopter off. We have no idea what the occupants would have done had he not arrived when he did. And I really can't answer your question. I really can't say who was in the helicopter. I don't know who was doing it. I have no idea. I'm trying to find out, of course. I'm trying to do research, trying to find out who has the black helicopters and that.
How are you doing that? Freedom of information things and things like that, or what?
Yeah, I did. I exercised my rights under the Freedom of Information Act, and I've just recently received 3 CDs from the CIA on MK Ultra and Project Artichoke regarding their mind control research, which they admit to, by the way. So anybody who says that our organizations don't conduct mind control, they're wrong. All they have to do is just exercise the Freedom of Information Act and get their own documents. They're there. In fact, the reason the CIA sent me CDs is because they have approximately 20,000 pages worth of documents on mind control.
So they're not dabbling in it just a little bit.
Not just a little bit, no. No, they're not. Now, the official word is that their research ended in 1984, but there are quite a few people like me still having mind control done on them, and we know that it has not ended. So it has either gone deeper undercover, or a different organization has taken it over. Perhaps the CIA is not doing it themselves anymore, but somebody else is. So that's what I'm trying to find out now through my research.
Of course, you got to watch out when you deal with government agencies. They all want plausible deniability, so they keep turning things over to different people, so they don't know much about it.
Yeah, that's what they say, yeah.
Yeah. And now, interesting thing about this whole mind control experiment is Is it a mass hypnosis, or is it done by sounds, or you have any idea how to do this?
According to my research and what's happened to me, there's a variety of ways that the mind control is conducted. I know that there are some, there's evidence that there are some technological instruments used, maybe like radio waves and waves of different sorts. But then some of it is done, seems to be done telepathically too. In my research, I found some people who are able to do remote viewing, remote influencing, and projecting mind control that way.
So in other words, there's a lot more to remote viewing than just checking up on things. You think there's actually an ability of some people sitting in a room someplace to actually control people?
Yeah, there is evidence of that. One of the things that I've been doing recently is interviewing remote viewers and discussing with people who have gone through the formal remote viewing programs what can and cannot be done. So I'm learning a whole lot that way. And all of the ones that I've talked to have told me that yes, that mind control influencing can be done through those means.
Now you live in Tennessee now, so this last incident happened in Tennessee, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It did happen in Tennessee.
But before that, with the military, that was somewhere else?
With the military, that was in Columbus, Mississippi, near Columbus Air Force Base.
And then as a child, where were you?
As a child, I lived in Alabama.
So ever who is doing this can keep track of you?
They obviously have very deep pockets and a lot of technology and helicopters and personnel at their disposal. That is correct.
Now, when we talk about, your first experiences with, I assume you think it was extraterrestrial. It sounds like it to me.
Right. My first experiences seemed to be really done by the aliens. And I think that most abduction experiences where people report alien abductions, I think most of them really are done by extraterrestrial type entities or other dimensional, something other than Earth. But there are some other people like me who have also had the government, military, or human abductors as well. But we're a small percentage.
You're listening to our interview. This is Jerry Pippin, and we will be right back. So, anyway, most of these people have had extraterrestrial experiences, but I understand from reading your book that maybe not all of these extraterrestrial experiences are what they appear to be.
Right. I had one experience where, and this is a conscious recollection, by the way, not remembered under hypnosis or anything, but what I remember consciously. It happened, I think, around 1995 or 1996. I was living in Tennessee, and I don't know how I got to this location. I don't even know where I was, but somehow I was taken to a place, and I was kind of drugged up, felt like a zombie. I was standing in line with a bunch of other people who had been zombified, and I was trying to get my bearings, and I thought, oh, I know what this is. We've been abducted, and we've been drugged, and this is an alien abduction. And I thought, I wonder if I recognize any other abductee here. So I turned around in the line to see if I could see anybody I recognized. And at first I saw somebody who looked familiar, and I thought, oh, that's so-and-so. And then I looked again, and I thought, no, it can't be. That person is a little bit shorter and a little bit smaller than my friend. And so I walked up close to that person, and as I got closer and I was fighting the effects of the drugs, I noticed that it wasn't a person at all. It was one of those creatures with the off-white colored skin and the big black eyes. But then I saw the creature move, and the creature bent its elbows and bent its knees. And the real alien creatures that I had encountered in the past did not have joints like that. You know, their body movements were more flowing than that. So I thought, oh, there's something wrong here. And so I told myself to fight the effects of the drugs. And I move up even closer to get to the creature to get a better look. And I got right up in its face. And I noticed where the big black eyes were stitched onto the white fabric.
Literally sewed on there.
Literally sewed on there. And I could, literally sewed on there. And I could see the texture, the weave of the texture in the fabric on the face, too. And I thought, oh, my, you know, this situation here, it's real human people dressed up in alien costumes and doing experiments on us under the disguise of aliens. And so I thought, if these people realize that I've come to this realization, you know, this conclusion, this realization that I'm in really deep trouble. So I told myself to turn around and be a good little subject and not cause any waves, or I'd, no telling what would happen to me. So I turned around in line, and at that time, the abductors started moving the line forward, and there was a transport device, like a tram. The doors slid open horizontally. We were herded on to this transport device. The doors closed. We went some distance, and then the doors opened on the other side. We got out, and that's where my memory ends. I can't remember anything else about the situation. But that certainly made me go back and look at all of my past abduction experiences again and re-examine some of my earlier experiences. And when I did that, and I looked back at some of them, and I had called it an alien abduction experience, but in two of them in particular, there was nothing really alien about it when I started examining it. You know, I described my surroundings as irregular rooms that looked like hospital rooms with the square rectangular layout, you know, regular lights. Green surgical curtains separating one cot from another cot, and the aliens looked like humans. So that made me wonder, you know, how many of these experiences that we think are extraterrestrial experiences maybe are not. But still, so I've been researching this and talking to abductees all over the country, and it seems like most of them are real aliens, and it is a small percentage that's done by the human element.
Leah Haley, we're going to take a break. You know, we were talking before the break about a rather amateurish, attempt to fool you that they're aliens, but the audience should remember you were drugged up. They probably figured you wouldn't figure that out.
Right. I feel certain that I should not have remembered that experience at all. And probably one of the reasons that I did remember it is I'm really stubborn. And when things are being done to me like that, you know, I fight it mentally and try to exercise all the powers. And which brings another aspect of this phenomenon into it. You know, at the very beginning, I know there was an effort to try to explain all of this stuff in terms of nuts and bolts and the mechanical aspects of it, but the phenomenon is way beyond that. You know, it deals with not just the physical element, but even all the different elements of us as people are concerned, like the spiritual side of it. All of this stuff has had a deep spiritual impact on me as an individual.
I think it's the one thing I've figured out after years and years of doing these shows is everyone has been touched emotionally and spiritually. It changed your entire outlook most of the time.
Yeah, it certainly does. The one thing that it did was make me realize that the universe is so much larger than what I had once thought and so much more complex than I once had thought. You know, I didn't used to think about other dimensions, interdimensionality, that seems to be an element. And I witnessed in my own life as a result, you know, what I write, Jerry, I mean, obviously your audience can figure this out really quickly. It's very controversial. And as a result, I've seen the negative, you know, trying to bring me down and destroy and discredit and debunk. And I probably can tell you every debunking method under the sun because I've been a target of it. So I've seen...
In fact, one time I remember... A fellow who actually is pretty well known in the UFO community was really taking you on, and you handled your own, though, with him. So, I mean, you can handle these debunkers.
Well, they've gotten me down from time to time. There was a period in 1999 where I'd been knocked down pretty hard and struggling with all of it.
When do you think that occurs? What do you think the angle is there?
Well, I think that the people, what I think is going on with the debunking, the reason it's going on with me is I think it's my theory, okay? I don't have all the answers here, so I want to make that clear. I don't have the answers, but my theory is that the people who are trying to shut me up want me shut up because they are so afraid that we're going to find out who is doing the disguised alien abductions and the mind control, and that it's wrong. I mean, it's illegal. We've got kidnapping involved there. You know, I've been tortured. You know, so that's punishable by law if they're ever caught.
And your torturing was done, you think, by our own people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, no doubt about that. Yeah, and I think that they're afraid that they might get caught. So the best way to protect themselves would be to discredit me and debunk me and other people like me who are talking about this subject. It's the best way. So I'm sure that's why it's going on. But you know, the evil side, the dark side, the negative side, it's not the only side of it. I also have seen evidence in my own life of the people protecting me. I think that's one reason that I regained my strength and I'm physically able to go out and talk about this stuff again and try to educate people about what's going on.
And now you're saying the good forces are also human?
Well, I think that every element is involved, and that's what I was talking about, the universe being more complex than I'd once thought. Human, yes, but spiritual as well. What people call angels, you know, God. So,
in fact, this is a thread that's been running through UFO programs and sightings for some time now. They're evidently everyone that has an encounter comes back with this feeling.
Right. It does, and I brought this up a lot in my last book, Unlocking Alien Closets. The subtitle of it is Abductions, Mind Control, and Spirituality, because I also go into how the negative attacked me and how the positive side tried to pull me out of it and succeeded, obviously, because in the late 90s, I was so ill and so mentally depressed and everything over the things that had happened, I really was not very functional. And so the good side, the positive side, you know, brought me back to physical health, mental health, emotional health, spiritual health. We're working on financial. I'm still in bad shape that way. I'm still in really bad shape that way. But you know, there's been a lot of progress in the other areas.
Yeah, well, I understand if you don't worry about it, the money will follow. But I've been looking for it myself. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you go ahead and get it first and then just give me some, okay?
you know, we're laughing about this, but you actually went through a terrible time. I mean, you lost loved ones and everything over this whole incident, and nothing that you really did.
It was really rough. Yeah, I in the early 90s, I had achieved everything I had intended to accomplish in life, and I was very, very happy, you know, quite fulfilled, and had what I thought was a great marriage, wonderful job, had my dream home, two teenagers who I could not have asked for better children. But when I started speaking publicly about this, my whole life fell apart. My husband couldn't handle it, not because he disbelieved. He didn't. He even witnessed part of one of my abductions, and it frightened him, and he got caught up in it, but he didn't want it. So he thought to divorce me would be to get rid of it. And I think probably the marriage would even have stayed together if I had not spoken publicly about it. My husband said, if you don't keep your mouth shut, I'm going to divorce you. And I had to follow my heart. My heart told me that people had the right to the truth. So he couldn't come to terms with that, and so he left me. My older daughter was upset extremely by the whole thing, and she has disowned me. That's probably been the most difficult aspect of the whole thing, is my daughter disowning me because of my decision to go public. So it split apart the family, and I lost my home, lost all my money because my husband took all that. And
so basically, not only did you have a financial problem, and you had these emotional problems and losing contact with very close people in your family, but then you had the government doing mind control on you and actually threatening you and a few other things.
Yeah, it was pretty bad for a while, but like I said, there are the good forces out there, too. Oh, I lost my job, too, you know, because I was speaking publicly about this stuff. It all hit at the same time, so.
We're going to take a break, and we'll come back and talk to Leah Haley about some more positive things, but I thought it was very important that we brought that out, that you paid a personal price, and you really had nothing to do with it.
Well, actually, I have to take some of the responsibility, though. I mean, I did make the decision to go public with it. And had I just done what my husband ordered, you know, I'd still be married, still have my daughter, and still have my home.
You think many people probably give in to all these pressures, or we'd be hearing more?
Oh, I'm certain of it.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks. Jerry Haley, your books are incredible. I want to do the subtitle because I am really, you know, this. It's very important that we do the whole thing on unlocking alien closets, and then you put in the subtitle.
Yeah, the subtitle is Abductions, Mind Control, and Spirituality.
And someone that orders this book, and I recommend highly that you get it, you can. We have a link to her publisher on our website, and we also have a Leah Haley section in which this program ultimately will be archived, in addition to the radio broadcast. And was it difficult to write the second book after the first one, or was this more of a relief of getting things out?
Both. I don't hold back anything in that book. I really build my soul in unlocking alien closets, and I've told a lot of personal things that most people wouldn't talk about, and
so in other words, it was not only therapeutic, but it also was difficult to write.
Yeah, it was difficult to write because there are some very embarrassing things in there, and I had to decide whether to put them in or whether to leave them out. And I made the decision to put them in, even though it was difficult for me to, because I felt that to have omitted them would be to have shown only part of the picture. And I thought that people had the right to the entire picture. And the other reason for it is that the types of things that I talk about in that book, it's not happening just to me, but to other people too. And I say in the introduction, in fact, that this is not just my story. This is the story of many people. And of course, it's on a personal level to me, yes. But it affects a lot of different people, not just me.
I would imagine, since you're back out making personal appearances now and doing book tours and going to conferences, This is also difficult and therapeutic at the same time. You probably meet a lot of people that you wouldn't do, meet otherwise and have similar stories.
That's the positive part of my getting around to these conferences, is that because I've written this book, so many people feel like that they can share their stories with me. And it's good for me to hear, because with so many people sharing the same things, it provides confirmation for everybody. And talking about this subject is therapeutic. Is it really not good for you to leave everything bottled up inside? And in that way, writing the book was therapeutic for me, too.
I notice when we broadcast from these conferences or do public shows, invariably have somebody come up and they'll be a little reluctant to tell their story, but by the time they get through their story on the air, they actually feel relieved. So I think I understand what you're talking about the therapeutic.
Yeah, right. That's true. And at the very beginning, when people are having these experiences, they feel like they're the only one and that they're going crazy or weird, but
then you have the mind controllers telling you are crazy.
Right. They don't help any. But yeah, so it's very good for people to share, because somebody realize that somebody else has gone through the same thing. And that's why these conferences like this are good, too. It's a place for people who feel like they're all alone to come and see the numbers of others like them who have had the same kinds of things.
Okay, we'll be right back and wrap this up, an incredible hour with Leah Haley. I'm Jerry Pippin. You're listening to the UFO Files. Haley, before we leave here, let's talk a little bit more about the actual extraterrestrials. You mentioned something a little earlier got my attention when you said, well, I was in a regular building and had regular lights. What about the extraterrestrials? What kind of lights did they have?
Okay, here's a common example of my real extraterrestrial experiences. The craft is rounded. The room is round,
No corners,
just rounded. The room is streamlined. No green surgical curtains. As far as the lighting is concerned, it's extremely bright inside the craft, but you cannot see the source of the lighting. You don't see any light bulbs. You can't tell where it's coming from. The control panels, I remembered, were extremely streamlined. Colored buttons that they push. They had compartments that were inset inside the walls of the craft. And I can't remember anything else right now, but those differences stand out in my mind.
Well, those are pretty important differences. Did you ever figure out where these ETs actually are coming from?
I really don't know.
They never really, you can't tell if they're interdimensional or whether they're extraterrestrial from other, you just don't know.
I really don't know. The ones with the big black eyes, the ones that I have seen, I've heard a lot of people say that the creatures don't have emotions. Well, the particular ones that I've seen did have emotions. I've seen both concern expressed and also fear expressed in one of them.
They were afraid of you or what?
No, it was an experience in which our military got one of them, and he was afraid.
So you weren't the only one that was terrified of the military.
Right, yeah.
So you actually were in this particular situation already in the custody of the military, and then they showed up with a gray or what?
This was an incident that happened on a beach. There was and this sounds really crazy to me. This is one of the far-fetched ones. But I was on a craft. I remember being on a craft that that crashed on the beach, and our military got the aliens' warboard of craft, and that's when I saw the fear. But this is one of the most difficult aspects of my experiences. Now that I've had that mind control experience, now I have questioned things like this, and I ask myself, okay, was that a real incident, or was that an implanted memory? The researchers that have tried to research my case independently, they believe that the crash really took place. There is evidence that a crash actually took place around Navar Beach in Florida in 1988, which matches what I had remembered. The Joint Chiefs of Staff were down there investigating something that was highly secret in a hangar in which a whole bunch of air conditioning was brought in at the same time. And there were other independent reports of UFOs being loaded onto flatbed trucks down there. And so there is some evidence
that it happened.
But I need more evidence than that to satisfy myself.
And you're still working on all of these things. I'm sure, Leah, we'll be talking to you in the future. You have fun in Washington.